send me scrambling to check on certain things, you know. So I would have rather that it was an exchange, it was a conversation between the two of y'all as opposed to you interviewing him. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I tried and I felt for a good deal of it, that's what it was, a conversation. You know, I think when we do this, we ought to emphasize the nature of conversation rather than the nature of interview. And we'll work on that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. It's 1 o'clock, 101 actually, of the half in New York City, WBAI 99.5 FM. Tell your friends. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, Clayton, playing the race card like that is really not fair.
How did we play the race card?
Because you tried...
How do you get you back? Are you speed dialing?
You tried to suggest that I was trying to be racist.
You
How
are.
Do you know that
you
I
are.
Know that you're black? I don't know that. I was just looking at a person the other day.
You don't know. You don't know that Utrice is black?
I know Utrice is, or I
do. You know? Do you know that Hugh Hamilton is black?
No, I do not.
Okay, well, say goodbye to me again.
Goodbye.
I mean, this is absurd. Yeah, does this guy speed dial? Is that how he gets back on the air so often? Yeah. WBAI, you're on the air.
Freedom of speech, Clayton, means even if I have...
Okay. I was going to give him a moment because, you know, Monroe, they're at a point, you say there's something so absurd about Monroe that it's like having a dash of cold water splashed on you on a very hot day. BAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Clayton. How you doing?
All right.
Listen, I want to put a different kind of dimension into the race issue and the environmental issue as well. There is one thing that is not discussed enough on the left and progressive community. That is the call for a shorter work week based on full employment.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah. Well, let me say this. It was discussed a lot more, I'd say 5-6 years ago. There was an awful lot of discussion about not only the 35-hour week, but weeks perhaps even shorter than that, the staggered work days and work weeks. There was a good deal of discussion for a time, and you're right, it's just vanished.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look just the in the last week. Look at what the unions stopped. The environmental movement cold because of protecting jobs.
Yeah.
And Americans are overworked. And American people, surveys show American people support to a tremendous degree this issue, but nobody's talking about it.
Well, I think many people who don't talk about this take their guidance from their unions for obvious reasons. You know, I mean, let's talk about a union like the teachers' union, where you hear a great deal from the union leadership, you almost never hear from any rank-and-file members of that union. So, you know, the terms of support for any issue is filtered through that lens. I mean, you look at the head of the teachers' union, that's who you hear from. I don't know what the rank-and-file feels about a great many issues, because we don't really get any sense that there has ever been a consensus in the union about anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I'd like to hear more spoken about on BAI.
You make a very good point.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're not the union, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. And that is something that, hey, we'll address that. You raise a very, very good point. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
BAI, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Clayton. Thank you for taking my call. I was listening to the beginning of your program where you were talking about the Middle East. I thought that was a very good dialogue you folks are having.
Okay.
One specific thing that to me is more important even than just the terminology used, Middle East, is really the spirit behind and the actions behind what the word Middle East causes, you know. You can call it rose, but it's still, you know, the usage is what's more important. For example, right now... you know, this hour, Grandpa should be on the air. I mean, just if I may use an analogy.
Why should he be on the air?
Well, this is his time slot. And
Wait. What do you mean it's his time slot? What does that mean?
Well, listeners know, and listeners have given a lot of money in the past because 12 to 1:30 was Grandpa Al Lewis.
Okay,
Al Lewis
if you don't want to give the money anymore, don't give it.
Wait a minute. Let me just give you my analogy.
No. I'm not letting
please,
you give
please,
me anything. Wait.
In other words, what's more important
than Hey. Now, you're going to listen for a moment, okay? You can put him back up. You're going to listen for a moment, and then you'll talk, okay? Nobody here owns any airtime. All right? I don't own it. This isn't my slot. It wasn't Al Lewis's spot. Nobody here has ownership of a spot. When you say to me that this is his spot, that's when you lose me, friend. Okay?
Well, okay. I mean, again, don't get caught up in the terminology. The spirit behind what I'm saying, Clayton, is, as listeners, a lot of people feel that this was a time for Grandpa. And really, but I'm not saying who owns it. The point is that the station was never honest with the listenership and said that Grandpa's no longer on the air. the Grandpa's fired.
In other words, really?
We know he's not on because we listen and he's not on, but never
He wasn't fired.
Okay, how about Wednesday night?
He wasn't fired. He wasn't fired. No, that's all right.
Sorry, I'm too
He wasn't fired.
See, again, you're talking semantics. Is he on now?
Who?
Grandpa. Or Robert Knight. These folks.
Let me ask you a question.
They're not fired, but they're not on.
Let me ask you a question. Are you aware of the fact that I have been fired twice at this radio station? Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay, and so you have no complaint about that. That doesn't bother you. There's nothing about that disturbs you. Of course it doesn't, or you would know about it.
No, the context by which you were fired may be a little different than the context by which Robert and Grandpa were fired.
How do you know that?
I'll tell you why. Because when you were fired, I don't know if the same thing happened as is happening now. Right now, listeners have been in front of the station since Tuesday, 24 hours a day. We've been listening.
Oh, that is nonsense. That is not 24 hours a day. What are you talking about? No, let me hear. Where do you get this 24 hours a day business? I came here this morning. Wasn't anybody out there today?
Well, I saw you walking in, and you'll see us when you come out.
Okay.
We've been here since Tuesday. We're holding a 24-hour vigil.
I saw three people. I saw three people when I left on Thursday. Three of you.
I didn't say they were thousands, but it's a constant presence. The listeners have drawn the line. I mean, this is
This is the most absurd thing I've heard today.
Listening to you
is listening to something like very bad satire. What you're saying is so preposterously absurd.
When Al Lewis called
a rally in front of the station, two people came. All right?
I was here.
This is when he was first removed from the air. All right? And I'll tell you something. Al Lewis saying things that, in my judgment, were blatantly racist, were just outrageously insensitive to people, to persons of color, who he claims to care a great deal about, would have been, in my judgment, sufficient reason for removing him from the air. There were other reasons involved, but that would have been enough for me. Okay?
What's his status then? Has he been removed? Because from what I understand, management is claiming that it's something that Randy Critico did, which is a complete slight to the listenership. Folks who have given their money to support Al Lewis Live and removing him.
You only supported Al Lewis. Is that what you're saying? When you sent money?
No, not me. I've supported everyone. From Utrice, I was a big fan. I've always been a big fan of the station.
Okay?
But there are listeners that are sending money specifically to Al Lewis. And
well, they don't have to send it anymore.
And that's where the last few fund drives have been a disaster. Because
how do you know they've been a disaster?
Because Utrice, the quote from Utrice was, when someone asked her how much money was raised, the quote, none of your business.
Yeah.
Roy never said that.
I don't know how we manage.
It's a community radio station.
How do we manage to still be on the air?
We fund it collectively.
How do we manage to still be on the air?
Oh, not for much longer at this pace.
Oh, I see. So you're going to shut us down? You and Al Lewis are going to come and shut the station down?
You see, you folks, you argue with semantics and you twist words. I don't know, up on the radio, why is that? Why are you lying to the listenership?
Well, how am I lying to the listenership?
You just twisted my words and said we want to shut the radio station down.
Well, you said not for much longer. That would indicate to me that you want to shut the station down.
No, whoever is firing Robert Knight wants to shut the station down.
Do you know
whoever is firing...
Robert wasn't fired. Robert wasn't fired.
Back on the news in Freeport.
Well, let me hear.
He went to Tulia, Texas to cover a very vital story, a community story.
And who sponsored the trip?
He paid for the trip.
No, he did not.
WBAI.
He did not pay.
Robert, that's what
he
I
did
heard,
not
Robert.
Pay for the trip.
Was it on WBAI?
Yeah, but he did not pay for the
Earthwatch. Be back on WBAI, Clayton?
Huh? What?
Will Earthwatch be back on WBAI? Dutree said he's not fired because she's using against semantics. The listeners know him as Earthwatch. Not as, he's also a news reporter as well. And he'll be back on the news, we hope.
Yeah, okay.
Will Earthwatch be back on?
I don't know. Did you ask Dutree?
Yes. In fact, two Thursdays ago, I was here with a couple dozen listeners.
Mm-hmm.
They said, it was around 12:30 at night.
Yeah.
They said, bring back Robert Knight. And she kind of stumbled for a second. Did not expect to see listeners at midnight or 12:30, which was great.
Yeah.
That's why we're here, and that's why we'll continue to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, I didn't know he was fired. And therein is the game that I said earlier about the semantics. Fired, banned. It doesn't matter. X, whatever, call it X. Is he on it Wednesday nights? No. Is Grandpa on right now? No. So be honest with the listeners, and let's stop playing this
game. What is dishonest about? You say he's not on. He's not on. What's dishonest about that? I agree with you. I agree with you. Hey, wait a minute. I agree with you that Al Lewis isn't here. I absolutely agree with you on that. He isn't here. I agree with you that Robert Knight is not broadcasting a program called Earthwatch. I agree with you. So what are we lying about?
Well, I haven't heard Utrice make a statement that he's...
No. We're not talking about Utrice now. We're talking about you and me.
Okay?
Okay?
Clayton, then at least let's be honest and let's be...
Well, what is dishonest about this?
In a listenership that I have Al Lewis's time set indefinitely, or I will continue to be scabbing on Al Lewis.
It's not Al Lewis. It's not Al Lewis's time. Don't you understand that? It doesn't belong to him.
You will be on the 12:30, the 12 to 1:30 time slot, formerly known as Al Lewis Live, and make the distinction then that it is formerly and that you're officially canceled.
Okay, here's what I hear you saying. Okay, let's understand something. You're saying that this time belongs to a white guy. No black guy should be here. That's what you're saying to me, aren't you? Now you be honest. You be honest. You stop lying. Because what you're saying is that this
Robert
was a
Knight
slot.
A
we're not talking about
Bernard
Robert Knight
White
now.
Guy?
We're not talking about them now. We're talking about Al. We're talking about
I'm
this
talking
time
about
slot.
Everyone,
no, no, you're not. You talked about Al Lewis. Let's continue to talk about Al Lewis. You're saying to me that this time belongs to a white man named Al Lewis, and you, a black guy, have no business there.
Absolutely not. What I'm saying.
Okay, fine. If that's
you
absolutely,
may be saying that.
That's the end
you
of
are,
it.
In fact,
say goodbye. Say goodbye. Okay. Did he say goodbye? I didn't hear him.
Hello?
Did he actually get to say goodbye? Hello? You're on the air.
I accuse you of nepotism.
Nepotism?
That's right.
Oh!
That's right.
Wait a minute.
Your best friend is a guy who will take things from people.
Who is that?
Allow me breath.
Why do you say he's my best friend?
He's your best friend.
He is
you
not.
You came up with him.
I did
you
not.
You came up with him.
No,
you
I didn't.
Look, this character.
No,
this
I didn't.
Character for 40 years had the people fooled that he speak Congolese.
Do something for me.
He doesn't speak Congolese.
Do you speak Congolese?
No.
Well, how do you know he doesn't speak Congolese?
Because he said so.
Wow,
yeah.
But you don't
he
know.
Said, listen,
maybe he was
so.
Just
he
trying to take
so.
You out.
He did say
maybe
he didn't
fact,
speak Congolese.
He really
that's
does.
What, look, he
speaks
did,
Congolese,
look, he
and
speak,
he doesn't want you to know.
Speak it.
And
before
he speaks
years,
Congolese. You don't understand
years,
it because you don't speak
years,
Congolese. Say goodbye. Say goodbye, my friend. Okay. Maybe he speaks several languages that you don't speak, and that's why you don't understand what he's talking about. Hello.
Good afternoon, Clayton.
You're on the air.
It's Charlie in Brooklyn.
Charlie in Brooklyn.
Clayton, last year,
mm-hmm.
47 attorneys were arrested and indicted. Eight of them pleaded guilty to federal charges of bribery of the adjusters and the insurance company. What happened with those attorneys? Nobody talks about it.
I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, if I could give you an answer, I would. But I really don't know.
47 of them last year.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them, Rebicki and another one over here in Long Island, the appellate terms have to suspend their license.
Look, I have to go back to ground zero on this. I can't give you any information about it. You seem to know a good deal about it. I mean, I don't.
I was wondering why the secrecy that nobody talks about
it. You're talking about it.
The newspaper, anybody.
Well, you're talking about it. Have you written to the newspapers?
No, I brought it up last year.
Well, again, I can't give you any more information than you apparently already have.
All right, let me ask you about something else. There was a guy in Charleston, South Carolina, that ran a paper called the... what's the name of the paper? It was a tabloid. It came out once a week. McCrae. And this guy was one of the most militant guys in the South, because the paper that he published it in Charleston, and he moved to Columbia, South Carolina. They burned a cross on his lawn, and he said that if they ever came to his door again with a white sheet, he was going to let them hear, you know, those white sheets. Nobody talks about this man.
How do you know they don't talk about him in South Carolina, where appropriately they would be talking about him?
Well, he's gone now.
Oh, okay. But nonetheless...
1948.
All right, but nonetheless, maybe they should talk about him in South Carolina, because they know more about the story than we know here. If you want to send us some chapter and verse on this, maybe we can talk about it. But why do you call a radio station to say that we don't talk about things, and when we tell you, we don't talk about them because we don't know them? Instead of calling and doing this, why don't you send us the material so we could talk about it?
I don't have the material, but they brought up a lot of people from all over the country. They talk about different black papers throughout the country.
Okay.
And one of the most militant men that they went in New York.
Right.
On 125th Street to talk. This guy was in the South.
Well, maybe they should talk about him in the South. Maybe they do. I don't know. And perhaps if you inquired from anybody you know in South Carolina, maybe there are some programs that have been done there, and we could repeat them. Thank you for calling. It is 1:18. Seven more minutes before we make room for Radio Free Aaron. Please stay tuned. You're on the air at WBAI.
Good afternoon, Clayton.
Yes.
This is Talib from Queens.
Talib?
Yes. Earlier you were speaking about the homeless and,
We were?
Not really the homeless. You was talking about
low-income housing.
Low-income housing.
Yeah.
And, And I just wanted to throw something out to the people that I used to live in Coney Island. I needed a spot real quick, you know. Had a large family. And, could get out there real easy, and but they didn't have any stores, you know, and a lot of the apartment buildings were being torn down. There was a lot of vacant lots around. There was a few new buildings, you know, new high rises out there, and a lot of black and Latinos were allowed to come in to those buildings because actually nobody else wanted to. All of the apartment houses that, you know, for low income, they're all gone, every single one. And they have one-family homes out in Coney Island now, you know, where there used to be maybe 1,000 families. Now there's only 50 families on that particular block. They have stores out there. They have the new stadium out there. Went out there and visited. And I just found out that one of the city projects, I'm not sure the name. It's on Surf Avenue, right looking at the water. It was sold. And some private concern is buying out the people who, or trying to buy out the people who are living there. And I wonder if this is going to be the trend with the city housing.
Well, it's going to be the trend with city housing as long as you have this administration, as long as people are content to have this and other administrations who don't pay very serious attention to these matters, because they don't have to. Because people in certain districts of the city don't vote, and politicians say, hey, we don't have to deliver any services to them. All of this comes down to the matter of what politicians, what city administrations can be compelled to do. If they're not forced to do certain things, they simply will not do them. And the only question they answer is the question of how many people turned out in a voting district. Okay? Listen, Talib, I got to move on, but
understood.
I do thank you for calling.
Thank you.
All right. WBAI, you're our last call. Tell us what you have to say.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm wondering why you indicated that you would ask about Robert Knight and...
I didn't ask about Robert Knight.
Let me finish the statement. You had said that...
Did I ask about it?
You asked who paid for his trip?
No, I did not say that. I did not say that. I said he didn't pay for it.
Yes, he did.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did, indeed.
Okay, how do you know that? How do you know that?
I've seen receipts.
Okay, send us the receipts.
Why should we send them to you?
Well, why are you raising the question?
Because you're lying on the air.
Oh, we're lying.
Yes.
Okay, do you feel better now? Is that an orgasmic moment for you? Okay. She feels much better. She caught us in this terrible lie that Robert paid for his own trip. Yeah, like Robert, who's screaming he doesn't have a quarter in his pocket, paid for this trip to Tulia, Texas. Hello, you're on the air. Hello. Last call. Hello. Now, see, people have wandered away from the telephone because I hear people. Let's try somebody else. You are our last caller. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, I just want to tell you you're doing a great job. And
okay.
Just keep it up. Some of the guys that are calling, they're just same folks. Just keep calling, and it's becoming a little bit annoying now.
Okay.
All right, just keep up the good job.
Thank you a lot.
All right, thanks.
Okay, we're gonna cruise on out of here. We can kick up a theme here, a piece of music that we frequently close with. Once again, my deepest and sincerest apologies to Robert. God, Robert, I didn't know you had that kind of cash on hand that you could jump on a first-class flight to Tulia, Texas. If you fly to Tulia, you probably have to fly to San Antonio or Houston and take a limousine to Tulia, Texas, because it's probably a little bit away from a major airport. But, Robert, we're terribly sorry, man. I didn't know you had that. I thought Robert was struggling for money, was struggling for cash. Apparently, he is not. So, clearly, he doesn't need to work here for the little piddling salaries they throw around at WBAI. Robert doesn't need the money. It's very, very good to know that. All of you, Clayton Riley on time, Mark Linton at the controls, both of us are out of here.
Yeah. Saturday, August 4th, be prepared for a long, strange trip exploring the life and times of American music icon, Jerry Garcia. WBAI program Morning Dew will present Garcia's music covered by many musicians throughout the years. Live performances from our studios will enhance the listening experience. And Volcanic Grateful Dead concert recordings will round out the show. Saturday, August 4th, 3 p.m., right here.
My love will not fade away.
Moorish. Orthodox. Radio. Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Every Wednesday at 9 p.m., you won't want to miss Asia Pacific Forum, the only place you'll hear about grassroots Asian politics, culture, art, and the Asian spirit. Only on WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio.
Many others in a moment's time sacrifice illuminated life. Many others forgot their own name. But I'm about to use it.
Asia Pacific Forum every Wednesday at 9 p.m. only on 99.5 FM.
Now we choose the same means of here to there, trading our living hours for shelter.
You're tuned to WBAI New York 99.5 FM, live from lockdown, Radio for Aaron.
Returned to the streets of London last night. A car packed with 40 kilos of explosives blew up in an area packed with young people, leaving clubs and pubs. 7 were injured. Police described the bombing as a calculated evil act by people who were seeking to maim and kill. The attack's been blamed on dissident Irish terrorists. Politicians from all sides said it would only strengthen their resolve to secure a peace deal for Northern Ireland. The explosion was the second in West London in just 5 months. The bombers struck outside Ealing Underground Station. At 11:33, a call was made to a doctor's surgery. The caller said that a bomb would go off in Ealing Broadway Road. That road name doesn't exist. Less than half an hour later, seconds after midnight, the bomb exploded. It went off on Ealing Broadway in an area packed with people. Our correspondent Stephen Cape is at the scene now. Stephen?
This was the most devastating attack by the real IRA in their latest campaign of terror. The device was twice the size of the car bomb left outside the BBC. The people of Ealing, West London, are lucky to have escaped with few injuries. This is the moment the bomb went off as a cameraman filmed a karaoke session just meters from a car packed with explosives. Confusion, bewildered. Customers tried to understand what had just happened. The bomb, 40 kilograms of homemade explosives, had caused widespread damage. The vehicle carrying the device had been totally destroyed. Fire staff tried to restore order. The police did not have enough time to evacuate everyone because the bombers had failed to give a precise address in their warning that a device was about to explode.
The windows just went completely, and we went outside and the flames were everywhere.
All I saw was like loads of heat coming towards me. I mean, I've been this probably the scariest time of my life. I didn't actually register exactly what happened.
The damage was substantial. It extended for 200 meters. The bomber's car was a grey Saab 9000. This was a particularly busy part of West London that the dissident IRA terrorists decided to target. Casualties could have been high.
This was a calculated evil act by people who were seeking to maim and kill.
There have been 7 real IRA attacks in London in 14 months. But Republican terrorists have been planting bombs in Britain with devastating results for years. Last night's attack was the biggest in this latest campaign, and yet no arrests have been made. So, what's happening now? A few hundred yards up there, forensic teams are busy combing the area looking for clues. They'll, for instance, want to know what the bomb was packed in. Was it similar to the device used at the BBC? Was it packed, for instance, in blue containers, the type used also in Northern Ireland? They'll also be checking CCTV. They'll want to see whether the bombers made any kind of mistake, whether they show their faces. Jeremy.
Stephen, the police have been warning about attacks in London for months now. Why couldn't they do anything about this one?
Simply because they just don't know who's behind it. It's possible, of course, that they may have the names of those people responsible in Ireland, the leaders of the real IRA. But the guys are actually planting the bombs here. They have no idea at all. Otherwise, they would have arrested them. Just think about it. We've had 7 attacks, and yet nothing has happened. And that's simply because those people have not been found. They could be English with Irish connections. They could be Irish people coming over from here, having safe houses here.
Or it could be.
For 150 years, you've been creating us, behaving like Satan. Bobby rating us in punch cartoons, you depicted us as swill. And whack TV shows like that Deadpool, Betty Hill. Amazing, you never came to your senses. Figured out you'd have to face the consequences. Senses crossed the water, but you didn't scope the tide. Now the tide is rising worldwide. Senior, pump your fist if you love freedom. Senior, pump your fist if you love culture. Senior, pump your fist if you love freedom. Senior, pump your fist if you love culture. From the boy to O'Neill and John O'Mahony to Joe McGarrity and Michael Flannery, seditions are tradition and it won't just go away. Say it loud, say it proud. I will say an unrepentant Fenian bastard. Unrepentant Fenian bastard. Unrepentant Fenian bastard. Respect to all who refuse to be masked. Fenian, hold your fist if you love freedom. Fenian, hold your fist if you love culture. Fenian, hold your fist if you love freedom. Fenian, hold your fist if you love culture. Fenian, hold your
Good afternoon, and welcome to Radio Free Erin. As you can hear at the tape we played at the start of the show, they tried to blame that the bombing was planted because it was the Queen's birthday that terrorists did it. And then there was another theory that the people that planted the bomb were against the Good Friday Agreement. Funny, Bernie, they never get to the point that maybe they planted the bomb because they wanted a united Ireland. I mean, from the 70s on, every time they planted a bomb, it was against Sunningdale. In the 60s, it was against the Anglo-Irish Agreement. Now, anything that happens in London, I guess during the Fenian's times, it was against Home Rule or something like that.
Yeah, it definitely was, John. And, of course, you know, everybody says that this is against the peace process. There is no peace process. What's going on, John? Is this what you consider peace?
Well, there was a few bombings last night of Catholic houses and people being burnt out of it in North Belfast. But it's a loyalist peace anyway.
Well, this was against the sellout. That's what this is. You more or less say this bombing is a response to the sellout that has been going on for the last 3 to 4 years.
Well, it's not even a response. It's an overall thing of a united Ireland and the British removal from Ireland, but they would never have that in any of their reports. It's always these guys got up one morning and say, you know what, I'm against this agreement. I'm going to go over to London and plant the bomb. That there's no long-range planning until what's going on.
Well, I mean, what disturbed me most was the incitement of the BBC to go out and pick up an Irishman, any Irishman, the whole thing of they could be anywhere. They could be anywhere among us. They could be Irish people living in Britain. They could be Irish people who came over. Now, I'm kind of sensitive about that because I went through, worked very hard for the Birmingham Six, who in just exactly that atmosphere of horrific bombings, people killed, in that case no one, thank God, has been killed yet, with the newspapers literally baying for blood, innocent people picked up, tortured, confess, and wind up doing 17 years, lives wrecked, marriages fall apart, children completely alienated from their fathers.
Yeah, well, I had cousins of mine, and John had cousins of his who lived in England.
Oh, my aunt lives in London.
Linda,
I'll be calling her soon.
Mine lived in Manchester, Leeds, you know, London, of course, Glasgow, Motherwell. And during the periods of the Irish Blitz, they did suffer in England, suffer more than they usually suffered, you know, around this time of the year, the 12th of July and all of this. But they did suffer, and it's just natural. Paddy's going to suffer again over there. Although there's a listener of ours down in South Jersey who originally hails from England. And one of her kids is over there. He was over on business in the last week, and she was rather worried about it. Being that she's British born of Belfast people, she knows what it is because her family went through the hell of being a Paddy in England. And I know my niece is over there. She's going to school for the summer over there. And my sister, when I seen her last week, did voice a little bit of you know, a problem with it. You hope nothing happens in the whole thing like this. And
Well, Bernie, I think we're going to do something a little out of character here on Radio Free Erin. They give a description of the bomber in the English newspapers, and I think as a service to Scotland Yard, we are going to give out that description here on Radio Free Erin. And I kid you not, this is the description of the people they believe that planted the bomb. He's described as a clean-shaven white man, 5'10", with blonde or mousy straight hair and a soft Northern Irish accent.
Well, that leaves out most of Sinn Féin.
That means most of Woodlawn and about a half of Woodside now are potential suspects. I know.
Or the three guys standing next to you at the bar that you're in right now listening to this show.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable that such, you know, everybody in this country knows about racial profiling. Black male between 5'10", 6 foot, 180 pounds. Here we go. This is it. Described as a clean-shaven white man, 5'10", blonde, mousy, straight hair, and a soft Northern Irish accent.
Well, they do the same thing that they do on some of these local channels now, where rather than saying he was black or he was Hispanic, they still had to get in, so they give his name, you know? If it was a black guy, it's either, you know, Tyrone or something like this. And in England for years, they did it. Alleged assailant was named Sean or Seamus or Tague, you know? And this is the same thing. That John, do you know many Irish people that could fit?
Well, it fits everyone in London.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, and the papers are looking to get someone, and there'll be a roundup, and we can almost guarantee you here, within the next month, somebody who's 5'10", with some sort of a Northern Irish accent, will be picked up. Whether he did it or not, there'll be people picked up with that description.
Yes, I mean, there'll be somebody picked up. He won't even be 5'10". He may be 5'3", or he may be 6'3". But he will be picked up, and he will do, very likely, as you say, whether he did it or not, probably just as likely as he didn't do it, he'll do 15 or 20 years in hell. Because anybody will tell you, an Irish prisoner in a British prison goes through absolute hell, especially when you're isolated.
Especially if you're 5'4", or, you know, something like that, you know.
All right, I want to read some of the condemnations about the bombing, and we think it's nice to note that the member of the British Parliament for West Belfast was out of the chute very early after the bombing. Gerry Adams said, and I quote, "Sinn Féin is resolutely opposed to these actions, and I want to call upon those who were involved in these actions to stop. Any real Republican would be involved in trying to build upon the opportunities for peace, justice," I almost thought he was going to say the American way, "involved in this process." Now, that was the member of British Parliament for West Belfast, Gerry Adams, and also a member of the British government in Ireland, Gerry Kelly, who in a previous life in the 70s used to plant bombs in London, and actually people were killed. He compared the people that were planting the bomb on Thursday, he compared them to the UDA, who are loyalist death squads that are operating in Ireland now at the moment.
Does the UDA ever plant bombs in London?
No, they don't. Might plant them in Dublin.
I do remember, though, when an organization Mr. Adams reputedly had some connection with planted a bomb outside of McDonald's in Warrington in Britain, and naturally enough, some kids were hurt. Two were killed. Yeah. But when you planted a bomb outside of McDonald's, that's what's likely to happen. But the curious thing was Mr. Adams had no condemnation for that. Just said, gee, tisk tisk, I'd be more careful next time.
And you're listening to Radio Free Erin, and we're giving you some of the reaction to the bombs that, or the bomb that went off in London. On this week's show, we're also going to have on Ed Maloney, but not from Belfast, but he's in another part of the world that starts with a B, the Bronx.
Or it's Riverdale, John.
Bernie can tell you about that. They don't consider that the Bronx. But Ed Maloney, who was the northern editor of the Sunday Tribune, has moved across the pond and is now living on this side of the ocean. And it's going to be Radio Free Erin's great loss that we won't have his analysis every week or so about what's going on. But it'll benefit the people, I think, of the Sunday Tribune, because he'll be writing about American politics, Andy.
He will be writing about both. And from what I hear, Ed has some amazing stories coming up that he's promised to share with us at the appropriate time.
And we're going to have on Nolik one way or the other. I told Nolik to keep on his cell phone. He's in Galway. He'll give us the latest about, of course, he's going to have to mention about the Queen turning 101 today. And we'll be doing our yearly dedication to her.
Queen Mother, please.
Queen Mom. You know, and we'll be taking bets for the death pool for next year. Whoever had the Queen Mother, once again, you've lost. But there's always another year, and there's always hope. We can never let that go. And around the 2 o'clock hour, we're hoping to have on Karen Lewis. We'll be talking about Grandpa Al Lewis. He's not feeling too well these days. He has some sort of disease that affects his eyes. And if anyone knows about Al, he loves to read. So we'll get a quick update around 2 o'clock. But I want to go to a tape right now, Bernie.
Well, we also have news, John, some rather important news from England, that Charlie Windsor, during a polo match, fell off his mount. And we can report that Chuck is out of the hospital and he's feeling a lot better. He's chipper again. And so is his mount, Camilla.
And you're listening to Radio Free Erin. On Thursday night, I had the privilege of being on with Bob Fast, Radio Unnameable. I more or less just sat back and watched Bob do his magic. And it's just typical of Bob. He had musicians playing, tapes going, phones on, videotape going. But he did a poem that he received. And I don't know where he got it from, whether it was off the internet. But it had to do with Carlo Giuliani and about his dying. And a lot of people always state, oh, why did the hunger strikers die? What did they get out of it? It has no effect on the world. And I know I heard that when Carlo Giuliani died at the hands of the police in Genoa in Italy, what good was his life? What did it mean? Well, it inspired people around the world. And this was a poem that it inspired. And Bob gave a dramatic reading of it on Thursday night, early Friday morning, around 1:15 in the morning. We're glad to say that we're going to play that. And, Bernie, you were listening to it that night.
I was, John. I got a phone call when you called me and told me that you were heading down to Wall Street. I watched Politically Incorrect with Mr. Maher. He was doing Mafia Week, another boring week of Politically Incorrect. And then I turned it on. I was very, very happy that I caught the part of the show. I listened to about 3 in the morning, but I caught the part of the show that I did with this thing about this anarchist, Giuliani, who was beat to death at the hands of the
police. Well, he was shot in the head.
Shot in the head and beaten by the Genoese police for being a member of a demonstration in the streets of Genoa.
So now we go to that tape. We come back. We'll go to Nolik.
That somebody sent me. It's a, like a little, I don't know, I guess it's a poem. Sent it to me in a newsletter. And I would like to read it. And I wonder if people would, like, play a little background with it. Peter and John, if that's possible. It's called They Murdered an Anarchist. blood tunnel was hosed away into sewers and buried, mingled with the blood of the hopeless, with the blood of those forced to beg and starve every day, with the blood of broken-boned, poison-beaten workers, men, women, and children, with the blood of others who died at the hands of the police, all these soldiers and hired assassins. Your blood infused them all with a fierce rage, the rage of the forgotten, the voiceless, expendable. Red rage rose from the sewers and poured out of the mouths of screeching rats and spilled into the streets of Genoa, into palaces and boardrooms and reception halls and limousines, and stained them all red, a carpet of blood. It overflowed into rivers and oceans. It touched continents far away. It crept onto beaches at night, staining them red, and way onto signed agreements and memos and documents that seal our fate, but which we never see. And it's named Denver, too, to remind everyone of the rage of those like Carlo who die so others may profit. To remind them that this blood-red rage has just begun.
And welcome back to Radio Free Erin, and that was Bob Fast from last Thursday night, Friday morning, reading a poem about Carlo Giuliani. And I took that off the internet if you were wondering why it's not as perfect as it should have been. You can get that on goodlight.net.
And Bob Fast said it just proves that there is some good in every family.
Yes, yes. And it's sort of about the Giuliani family, the Italian side, not the American side. But you can pick that up and read about a lot of other information on goodlight.net, and that'll direct you over to hear the whole show of what Bob did on Radio Unnamable. And as I told you, it was a pleasure to sit in, because I couldn't tell you how many times driving a yellow taxi, listening to Bob, trying to decide if the show was good. You stayed out a little longer and worked the streets. And he said, oh, then if I got boring, you went home early. Well, I said, you know, sometimes, very rarely, Bob, was it boring. You kept me out late, and I'd say a lot of cab drivers had the same experience. But right now we head over to Galway, and we talk to our own Nollaig O'Gara, and give us the latest news from Ireland. Nollaig.
Hello, John. By the way, you're a very to Father Nuaudach. I suppose we better catch up with first things first. First thing is that Dublin and Kerry drew in the All-Ireland quarter-final football a couple of hours ago in Thurles, replay next Sunday. Galway and Roscommon are playing at the moment. Galway are leading 9 points to one at half-time. Pierce Brosnan got married today in Ballintubber Abbey. Big media turndown, some restrictions. We wish them well. And what else have I got here about important things that are going on? The Galway races are coming to an end. And, of course, your new ambassador has been approved, Mr. Egan, despite some questions, I believe, by the Senate about his contributions to party funds, which exceeded the normal thing. We don't hold that against ambassadors in this country. Now, there are lots of people who have died in recent times that I want to mention as well, but to come to the other realities of life, it's been one of those weeks again. We've been waiting for the joint government package, which is now being considered, and there's been a limit of next Monday placed upon it. The Sinn Féin response from Castle Bellingham yesterday in County Louth was that they wanted further information. They now seem to be playing the clarification game that John Major used to be playing 5 years ago. But in this case, I think genuinely, the drama and the trauma of the last week was in some ways associated with the resumption of assassination of vulnerable Catholics in parts of North Belfast, for example. Unfortunately for everybody, and indeed for the propagandists, the last gentleman, Mr. Brett, who was assassinated last weekend, was a Protestant, but he was a friend of a Catholic, and he was married into a Catholic family, and he had the audacity to be standing outside a GAA grounds, and therefore was a legitimate target for the loyalist mobsters that are roaming the streets again, without a word on decommissioning on their part. Meanwhile, everybody seems to want the IRA to hand up their guns on the other side. So the news is bad there. As you know, Trimble has resigned, and therefore something's got to give by the 12th of August. Either the Assembly, the whole thing comes crashing down, or we have more elections in the North, more elections about elections. Meanwhile, a bomb in West London in Ealing on Thursday night injured 7 people superficially. 2 were taken to hospital. No great human damage done, thanks be to God, but lots of psychological pain felt by the British, who are off in a campaign, this time directed against the real IRA. Gerry Adams condemned the bombing as well. Perhaps the most interesting thing in this is that security people are speculating all over the place, blaming the Irish Gardaí for the thing, saying that some students had gone over this summer and therefore what are described as lily twites. Others saying that in fact they may have people in place for some time in London, or indeed the theory that's not entirely beyond the bounds of possibility that this may have been an MI5 operation aimed at stirring up the talks and making people make compromises they don't want to make, as has often happened before. I don't really know the answer to that one, but it is interesting that the People newspaper last Sunday and again tomorrow is running some very disturbing news about a former agent within the Real IRA organisation, apparently, and the other IRA before they split, which seems to suggest that, in fact, he was left out in the cold when the ceasefire and the peace process began and has become resentful and is now telling all, and that he, in fact, told his handlers in Belfast that the mix was being put together for the famous or infamous Oma bombing 3 years ago, and that, in fact, the British allowed it to go ahead, or indeed that they had no particular objections to that bombing, and that the idea that they didn't know the timing or the precise location may be only half the story. That's a horrendous thing if it's true. I'm not saying it is. I look forward to reading more of the People tomorrow and will report it back. I'm not asking you to buy the People. But it's the ongoing propaganda thing here is always annoying. There are other stories like Jeremy Archer, who's being moved to the Isle of Wight because he's a Category C prisoner. And, of course, the deaths then, including Lord Longford, the 95-year-old Catholic socialist peer, friend of our friend Tony Benn, and indeed the co-author of the De Valera official biography with the late Tomás Pionel, agus Páirc Ó Fianachta, Sagat Próstan Dangan. Lord Longford was a good man. He was a convert from Protestantism and indeed from Tory politics, and described as by Tony Benn last night as a socialist, a Catholic, and a statesman, which is why he never got very far in the British Labour Party. He was, of course, the author of the book that some of your own listeners would be familiar with over there, Peace by Ordeal, which analysed in a very clear and unbiased way the whole treaty negotiations of 1921 in the mid-1930s, when very few voices were supporting the De Valera position, and when Lord Longford did so. He was also a campaigner, of course, against pornography, favour of prison reform, women's rights, and indeed visited lots of Republican prisoners over the years. He was joked at by the media and, you know, the usual superficial nonsense that he was a terrorist because he wasn't happy with the way Myra Hindley and the Moors murderers were concerned. I just briefly mention some other people who thought Lena Fiedina and that will ring a bell on the other side. Brenda Brew, daughter of Cathal Brua, sister of Rory Brua, married to Páirc Fertero, Valinir Teirig. Late Sean O'Donoghue, we mentioned him. Brendan McMahon, who had done the historical research into the Connemara Gaeltacht. Sean McCartig, former general manager of Mitchelstown Creameries and member of the Coistigano of Conran na Gaeilge. Agus Reintley ni Eile, Tasulagum Nachwal Dinele, and of course Jimmy Drum, whom I missed because I wasn't on with you last week. Jimmy is a long story and one we'll probably come back to.
No, look, I want to just, and it's hard to get away from it. I mean, you were talking about how the papers portrayed Lord Longford and, you know, and try to portray him in a certain light. Well, the way now the Queen's mom is being betrayed here.
Indeed, I forgot to say I wasn't.
But we're going to finish up with that, Nolik, about the press fawning over royalty. And even in this country, turning on the news this morning, you know, and talking about this Queen mom and what a wonderful person she is. And actually, one of the newspapers, by mistake, and I have it here, somewhere, and I'll look for it while you're talking. They ran